Hi everybody, welcome to another episode of Trading Conversations, and I'm your host Philip Teo. You are here, my friend, because you believe that profitable trading is one of the most efficient ways to attain financial freedom and can be achieved as long as you are willing to put in the hard work to develop your trading competency. Our goal with this show is to introduce you to the traders who have dug through the trenches and emerged at the other end. From the sharing of their trading stories, strategies, workflow, and best practices, I hope to help you shorten your learning curve as you embark on your journey towards trading mastery. The upcoming interview you will be listening to is part of the online trading summit that we organized and hosted previously. Possibly Asia's first virtual trading conference, I invited more than 32 global trading experts to share their trading knowledge with more than 25,000 traders from around the world. So sit back and enjoy. Welcome back to Online Trading Summit. In this video, I had the opportunity to interview Jagdish Ahuja, who was possibly the youngest president on any stock exchange in the world when he was appointed as the president of Bangalore Stock Exchange in 1999 at the age of 36. Jagdish is a veteran trader who has been using technical analysis extensively over the past 30 years. During my interview with him, I got him to reflect on his 30 years of experience in the market and also try to understand how his trading has evolved over the years. It was a very interesting and insightful conversation, so make sure you watch the entire video. Hi, Jagdish. Welcome to the Online Trading Summit. How's the day going for you over there?
Oh, very nice. We're doing okay. Well out here.
I heard that you had just come back from your holiday in where? Which part of the world?
It was in Toronto, Canada.
Oh, Toronto. It should be quite cooling right now, right, I suppose?
You'll be surprised. It was hot.
Oh, it's hot. I see. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's summer right now.
Yeah, it's a peak summer out there.
I see.
Didn't miss
anything. Okay. Anyway, thanks again so much for agreeing to come on board this online trading summit despite your very hectic traveling schedule. And we are very happy to have you here to share with the summit participants all about the trading experience that you have, in the hope that they might find some nuggets of wisdom from your sharing and to be able to apply some of those, your experiences and knowledge, in their own trading. But of course, before we go in deeper into the main topic that I want to discuss with you, which is your favorite trading horizon, which is swing trading. Before we dive into that, I think it is really helpful if we could just run through a bit about your history and your past, how you actually got in touch with the financial markets, and how did your trading and your experience in the financial markets evolve from there. So maybe for a start, would you like to share with us when was the first time you actually got in touch with the financial markets, and how long ago was that, and how old were you then back then?
Well, it was out of college, 1984. That's way, way far away. And just out of college, looking at what careers to do. One was a family business, which I didn't want to do. And the other one was looking out where my friends were doing things. So one of my friends was deeply into the stock market, and that's how I got introduced into the stock market. And one thing led to another. And then I subscribed in 1985 for my first IPO, which was, you know, a huge success at that point of time. And that got me hooked onto the markets. And then I started following the markets. And that's exactly my journey began. 1986, I became an authorized assistant in the Bangalore Stock Exchange. 1988, I bought my first card, my only card, which to trade in those days, you needed a membership card on the Bangalore Stock Exchange. And from there, the journey started. On 95, I became a director. Till 98, I was a director. And then, you know, treasurer, vice president, and president of the Bangalore Stock Exchange.
I see. Years. So let's go back right to the start, when you first started to look at a market. How do you actually decide what kind of stocks to look at, and how do you actually trade? Is it like blindly or by your gut instinct, or you actually try to follow tips from other people? How was that experience like for you?
I guess we all have to go through a learning curve. There's no question of shortcuts here. The question is that you need to learn, you need to fall. It's just like cycling. You can never learn cycling without falling, no matter what you do. So this is the same thing. You need to have a few bruises down the way, and that's how you learn. We followed the gurus, we followed the tipsters, we followed CNBC, we followed most of the guys out there. and then realized these things don't work, and then slowly developed my own pattern, and then found that, you know, more important is that whatever you do in the markets, it has to be suiting you. It has to be your type. It's just like your girlfriend. Your girlfriend is your type, right? You cannot take somebody else's girlfriend and say she's mine. You cannot. She won't gel with you. So markets are as personal as a girlfriend. And the markets are there today because of one word. And that word is disagreement. Two minds can never think the same. Two people may look the same, but they can never think the same. And that's why the stock market exists. And that's why one buys and the other sells precisely at that same fraction of a second. One is bullish and one is bearish on the same stock, purely from their, you know, ideas. So disagreement being a factor of the market, you will not be able to find everybody's a trading system which suits everybody. You need to try, and it fits you, you hold on.
That's very true. Then you start.
So it's so, you won't believe it. I actually tried to train my own son on mine, and he is something which is a secret for me, which I have treasured and guarded all over. And at the same time, when I give it to him, he just can't fit into it. So I decided not to give it to him at all. And I gave him the basics and said, this is your basics. And from here, you need to grow on your own, because trading is an evolutionary process. There's nothing organic, inorganic about it. I cannot do an inorganic merger of a trading platform or et cetera, et cetera. I need to grow into it. I need my soul, my heart to get into trading. Then only I can feel what I'm buying. And that's how trading starts evolving. And that's how I develop the intuition. And after developing the intuition, we see the back test, the systems and the processes which follow. And that's how it all came about.
I see. So were you a technical trader right from the very start? Or actually, do you start off like most of us, having like Warren Buffett as the main idol that you have, and you will try to emulate value investing and fundamentals, and in time to come started to realize that, hey, actually fundamentals might not be the most ideal methodology for me. So how did it happen to you? Were you a technical trader right from the start?
Started off basically financing into the markets, because financing is something which was core to our business. We had a system called Badla Trading in those days in Bombay Stock Exchange. And there we used to finance, you know, we didn't have the derivatives the way it was now, back 20, 30 years back. So derivatives was evolved through what we call the Badla system, the carry forward mechanism, which was there, where we used to finance stocks from settlement to settlement and earn a small interest component. And that's how the Badla system started. And that was in Bangalore as well. And so this was the core which started. So I didn't start off as a fundamental trader or as a technical trader. I started off as a financial trader, purely putting my money out and trying to earn 3% a month, 4% a month if possible, and trying to compound growth. That's about it. Taking a risk from settlement to settlement on brokers.
I see.
Then I started investing as well, because all the gains started coming. And I saw the people who were borrowing from me at ridiculous interest rates of rollover margins. They were still making money, and that got me hooked onto it. And I started following a bit of it, and that started the curiosity started in my own investments. And I started investing first, and investing based on fundamentals, based on what I felt was good about the markets. And of course, we didn't have the internet down there. We didn't have phones down there at that point of time. Landlines in India were there like a waiting period of 7 to 10 years.
And when was that actually?
That was in the 80s.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so you didn't have a phone connection. Forget mobiles and all. I mean, you used to wait for a phone connection. And the only way an exchange to an exchange could get information was through a teleprinter. And teleprinters are 15 minutes late. So that was the opportunity for me. And I hooked up with my Bombay broker, and we started what we call a line trading, you know, trading between Mumbai and Bangalore, and trying to take advantage of the prices and trying to buy here cheap when Mumbai has gone up, because I know 15 minutes later, the price will move up here.
And so it's really like a kind of arbitrage that you were doing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I see. So that's
So from finance, I moved into arbitrage, and arbitrage and investments, both put together. So I didn't have time for, you know, technical trading at all. And that went on till India went on to evolve the derivatives, you know, segment. And once the derivatives started coming in, and we had something called the uniform settlement, where all the exchanges had the settlement on one particular day, you know. And then we went into the rolling settlement, which is like, you know, T plus two, where you have a rolling settlement. Then the arbitrage completely closed, mobiles came in, and the complete window has gone. At that point of time, my income started dipping, and I said, hey guys, what do I do now? How do I supplement my income now? And that's when I, you know, technical trading hit me. And that was, in the late 1990s, 1996, 1997. And that's when I started getting hooked on the market. And it's been 22 years that I've been on technical trading.
So what was it about technical trading at that point in time that got you interested in the first place? Was it because of someone in particular, or was it because of some books that you read?
No, it was a mentor. It was a mentor who actually gave me the guidance. And he started introducing me to charts. And the first charts I saw were actually printed on dot matrix printer. And one chart to print, you can imagine, it goes on and on. It takes around a couple of minutes to print one chart. And then we used to take it, because before that, he used to do it you know, on a graph sheet. And that graph sheet, as the markets went up, used to keep on adding more graph paper because the index was moving higher. So it just went overshooting. And then at one point of time, we moved to a dot matrix printer. And that's when we could see supports and resistances for the first time ever that we knew. And we historically knew that these are the supports, these are the resistances which are there in the market. And easier to, you know, buy close to support, sell close to resistance. And that's how the entire support resistance, because we could see something we have never ever put it in black and white, or we have ever seen it in a format of a chart.
Yes. And I suppose that at that point in time, having that kind of technology was in fact a very huge advantage and an edge, right? Because other people wouldn't have access to that at all. And they are totally in the blind in terms of how the market is forming support and resistance, while you guys can actually see it very clearly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're perfectly right. So that gave us the advantage. Technical trading gave us the advantage because we were well prepared for what to expect on the markets. And we knew the support resistances and, of course, a few moving averages, MACDs, etc., which we used to follow way back then.
And so I have a very, very interesting question for you right now is that, so at that point in time where not many people has access to that kind of way to look at charts and support resistance then, right? So do you notice that the way that prices move is already pretty much the same and consistent as how it is moving today, despite almost all of us has charting tools already? Is it still very much the same, or it is very much different in terms of how resistance and support are being formed back then compared to now?
Now it's become more competitive. Now it's become very fast. Things have gone notch higher thanks to algo trading. So opportunities which were being spotted earlier through human eyes are now being scanned through Python and through R and through every possible algo in the market. And volatility has increased.
I see. So during those dot matrix days that you've initially started to draw charts on paper, how long ago was that actually? When was
22
that?
22 years. 22 years.
I see. And at that point in time, what does that make sense to actually be trading like short term, or were you all looking at like medium term or long term kind of trading using those charts?
Those charts were also meant for swing trading mostly, because the settlements were Tuesday to Monday. So the first day was Wednesday, the last day was Tuesday. So, and Bombay Stock Exchange was Monday to Friday. So you had a window where you could buy on a Monday and sell on a Friday and square off the position without taking delivery.
Oh, it wasn't rolling. Without putting up any cash at all, is it?
Yes. Yes. So that was the beauty. And so we used to, that's how swing trading started developing, because you could keep a position open for 3-4 days, 5 days.
I see. So at that point in time, what was your rough trading strategy like, if you could still remember?
breakouts, basically on breakouts. Okay. Because breakouts then used to work far, far often. Unlike today where breakouts, you need to have a confirmation as well. In those days, breakouts were much more predictable.
So isn't that pretty much like what Jesse Livermore did during his times as well? Just focus on breakouts and ride it as long as it goes, and then just get out when it turns the other way around. Is that generally how you guys did it?
Yeah, I used to call it the moving bus strategy. So, you know, I don't like to wait at the bus stop. when the bus starts moving, just want to jump in. We in India call it footboard travel. So you don't even take a seat. You just hop into the bus and you ride along, and then two stops later, you just hop out. That's it.
Oh, yes, yes. I tried that before in Mumbai, trying to get up a moving train, and I almost fell, frankly. And I think that was because I was inexperienced. But I think that I thought that was a very efficient way of moving without needing the train to stop totally.
Yeah. At the same time, it gives you the excitement of the markets. It gives you the pulse of the markets. You're always riding something or the other. So it was good fun, and it gave good money at that point of time.
I see, I see. So that was like almost 20 years ago. So how did things evolve thereafter?
Thereafter, we started getting live technical charts in the stock exchange itself. And when I was the president, we had provided terminals for everybody. So it came in the year 2000. We had screens which were available where you don't need to do anything. You can actually watch it and subscribe for it. And if you're interested, you could have charts on your trading terminal, alt tab. So, you know, you could just do an alt tab and you could get the charts and you could trade as well. So that became forward. And the softwares weren't so developed. And so they started developing more and more features and became more feature rich, and then that's how trading started evolving more and more complex.
I see. So it's pretty unbelievable that it's like less than 20 years back, when such things were like so primitive, and it's such early days, and it's like only less than 20 years back. And today, technology is so advanced that charting tools, you can even use it easily on a mobile phone.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I see. So
the power of information. It's completely the power of information. Today, when so many people have the same amount of information, naturally, the volatility also tends to be on the higher side compared to what it was.
I see. So during those 20 years, as charts becoming easily available to most people, what do you notice about how the market changes and how prices move? Were you still using the same old strategy that you were using 20 years back versus, let's say, 10 years back or maybe even today?
No, trading has evolved much more. But one thing which has completely undergone a change is day trading. Earlier, it was easier to catch a trade intraday. But today, the volatility and the algos make sure that you don't get in at the right time. So you always miss the bus by a couple of ticks and you just see the bus move ahead, and you don't want to chase the bus because, as you rightly said, sometimes you can come under the wheels of it.
So, I see.
You don't want to be chasing buses. You'd rather be riding them. But before you ride it, the machines ride them. So that has changed. And because of that, what tends to happen is day trading has become far, far more challenging in today's circumstances and times than what it was earlier.
So in today's time, possibly if you really want to focus on day trading, you would really need to have computers helping you in a huge degree, right? If you're just depending on a human manual strategy and execution, you're going to be way slower than those computers and you can't really get an edge.
Let's take it like this. It takes you 650 milliseconds to blink your eye. And by that time, 300 orders have been placed or modified or deleted from the system by one algo. So that's the power of it.
So
at that point, you cannot beat them. Even before you can respond, it has already executed it.
So I suppose that's from a perspective of like if you are trying to do scalping, which is like trying to just...
Scalping is history without machines.
I see. So how about if we explore, I'm just wondering, if a trader looks at doing intraday trading, trying to ride the trend for the day, is it still possible for a human to still be able to catch the trend for the day for any particular instruments and ride it for the day before the market goes?
Definitely you can, but you need only one important thing is you need the support of algo, either algo trading or automated trading. Some way in which your execution doesn't fail. Because you need to be ahead of the market. You cannot be chasing the market.
I see.
If you have to be ahead of the market, you need to have your orders well in place. So you need to be looking in terms of stop limits, so in buying and in selling. So both your targets and using bracket orders so that you're already there in the system. So whatever happens, most of the time, what tends to happen in markets is only one thing. Your losses get expanded and your profits contract. So your profits always shrunk because you tend to have bite-sized profits, which you're used to. But losses are beyond you. And if you've not put proper stop losses, they expand beyond. And they can get you into what we call a frozen rabbit syndrome. You know, you just freeze when you get such things and your mind just stops working and you say, okay, let me think about it. Let me see. And then it falls further and then your losses become very huge. So unless you're willing to use, trading systems clearly, it is not going to, day trading will not make any more sense because you're looking at a very, very small fraction of the entire market, of the entire movement, and you need to ride it. You need to time it perfectly. You cannot afford slippages there because slippages could be fractures.
That's very, very true. And what would be your perspective? Because I understand even like for example, in India, most of the retail traders out there, a lot of them are still looking into intraday trading as though that they feel that they have an edge or they feel like they have a chance to even make money. What's your thought on that? Do you think that they are just being ignorant about how the situation has evolved beyond profitable intraday trading? Or do you think they are still pursuing something that is realistic for them?
Intraday trading, see what happens, the hype is created by the media. And what is intraday trading basically? Intraday trading is nothing but trading which happens because of certain events which come or play around during the day, right? Most of the time, if you see, especially stocks before results, they show you crazy volatility. Stocks which are depending on any news, they also show you a lot of volatility. So frankly, intraday is a challenge on its own. And unless you are prepared in terms of strict stop losses, in terms of targets, and leave it to the machines to do the rest, rather than interfering and looking at it every 5 minutes, what is happening, that doesn't work. You have your strategy, you have proven it in the past, it has worked, apply. Keep on applying. Yes, it will fail on a couple of days. You know that. You'll have a drawdown. So you know approximately how many consecutive losses you can bear. And that's why you chose that particular system, right? Because you've already gone through the paper trading and the simulation part of it. Now, when it comes to live trading, expect the same thing to happen. Maybe 20% more, 30% more. And keep that as your tolerance level and continue.
I see.
So you have a system in place. Just sitting in front of the screen and seeing something move up and chasing it and trying to buy it and trying to sell it and hearing CNBC blaring something on one side is not going to work.
I see. So in a nutshell, basically it is that if anyone wants to do intraday trading, he has to have the help of algorithm and program to help him actually to be able to execute trades very quickly rather than being discretionary about his trades. So that's the probably one of the way to have a higher chance of being able to remain profitable from an intraday trading perspective, right? So let's move on to the part where maybe I personally think, and maybe that's what you think as well, which is swing trading. Do you personally think that swing trading is a more suitable strategy for most like part-time retail traders to actually start with and build their competency around before evolving into other kinds of styles of trading?
Definitely. Swing trading is a natural, evolutionary process wherein which from day trading, when you realize that the machines have overtaken you now and there's no scope left for you there, you will move to swing trading automatically where you'll be a little more relaxed. You have a little more breathing space. You have time to react and you will also be able to take positions at different stages. Say, for example, you've got a breakout. Normally, in a day trade, you will have to go along with the breakout. Okay? But in swing trading, you can take maybe 30% on the breakout, wait for a retracement, take another 30%. So you're already 66%, like if you take 33, 33, 33. And the last 33, just in case it's retracing almost 100% of that move, just before 80, 90%, you try a last chance and take maybe 30% there, 33% there. You may get an opportunity for the next move upwards.
I see.
Swing definitely gives you that opportunity to at least break your trades up. So you're not risking too much. At the same time, it helps you to bring your cost lower. If it happens, if it doesn't happen, it's okay. Whatever you got, you can still ride it. There's not a problem at all. And it also gives you the same luxury, shall I say, of time when you can exit, maybe today I could exit partly, since the story is on, I feel that it has run its course and certain indicators have turned overbought, etc. Or there's a divergence which I'm seeing. A divergence cannot be a 100% indicator. It just gives you an idea, probability that the chance that, you know, that it's topping out, or you see a pattern which is not good and you want to book some profits. Here you have the luxury of breaking your trade up into a fewer trades and booking 33% one day or 50% one day and waiting, holding on and seeing what happens the next day or the next couple of days. So swing offers you the luxury of time, which since you have the luxury of time, the algos cannot beat you to it, because the algos otherwise will beat you to it every time and you'll be paying a higher price whenever you buy. Here you can afford to wait and you can buy it at your own predetermined levels.
I see. Yeah, I think that's very true as well. So I think for a better understanding of the context, because as I ask you more questions about swing trading, I think it's easier to understand more about how do you actually operate your swing trading strategy and methodology, so that later on when we ask some more in-depth question, there's some context for the summit participant to understand why do you look at things from that angle. So maybe we can just dive a bit deeper into the how do you actually start your swing trading. So for example, there are like thousands of stocks listed on NSE and BSE, for example. How do you even filter down such a humongous list of stocks to even focus on before you decide which ones you want to execute a trade based on your swing trading strategy? So how do you go around filtering such a big amount of stocks?
I guess it's first you need to zero down in on certain stocks which you find palatable. The market is a buffet. The market is a huge restaurant. And nobody can eat the whole restaurant, right? You can't. You just need to take your plate. And then you need to see what fits in your plate. And not only what fits in your plate, but what you can consume. And if you're diabetic, you avoid sugars. If you're overweight, you avoid the desert or fats or fried stuff. So, you know, if you're underweight, you go whole hog, enjoy the luxury of it. So what happens is, similarly, everybody's nature is different. And personally, I use technical indicators to zero in on stocks. So certain basic indicators, like a moving average, you know, of course, it's tweaked with certain other indicators, which gives me a process of elimination. So right now, I track only 200 stocks. My universe doesn't go beyond 200. And that keeps on updating, maybe 3-4 stocks in a month. I pull in and pull out. That's about it. I don't go beyond 200. I don't want to know beyond 200 because I cannot monitor anything beyond 200.
Okay, that's it. Is it too sensitive for you to shed some light on how you narrow down to that 200? What is special about those 200 stocks? Is it like liquidity parameters, or is it about capitalization parameters that you look at?
One is that they normally should have a futures and options. So we look
single
at
single stock futures, right?
Yeah. So that, you know, anytime you are holding stock, you can always play with it. And you could, if you feel like how I discussed with you, is like, suppose if I am feeling a little bearish now, I need not sell my holdings. I could possibly sell an in the money call or an out the money call. So, you know, that sort of thing, it gives me the leverage and gives me luxury again of using options at the same time holding on to my base. So that, or if I feel threatened, I may even buy a put. So that sort of thing when I don't feel like selling out. So these are the things which definitely help. One. Second is, of course, technically the scripts have to be sound. I don't want to be trying to be a hero and trying to face a, you know, running train coming towards me and trying to save a damsel in distress. Sorry, that's not me. I don't want to take those contrarian positions. The only time I take contrarian positions is where I've got certain other technical parameters, which will still give me, you know, that I need to dig inside, and those I use only for investing, where I play contra.
I see.
So on investment, I play contra, but on swing trading, I go with the trend.
So do you see yourself more of a trend trader, or do you see more yourself more of a mean reversion trader in the realms and the horizon of swing trading?
I'm normally a trend trader.
Trend trader, right? I see. So let's say right now you narrow down 200 stocks that you look at, and on and off, that you will switch a few in and out along the way, but usually that's about that few 200 stocks. And what do you do with these 200 stocks in order to iron out or decide if there's any trading idea today or no trading idea today? Do you do it on a purely discretionary model, or do you use some kind of algorithm to pick those few stocks to dive deeper into?
See, just like, you know, there's a saying which I've only made up, and that is like, you know, a trader needs to do his homework just like an athlete needs to do his warm-up. So there's no question of you going into the market without doing your homework. There's no question of you running a race. You'll pull a hamstring for sure if you're running a race and you've not done your warm-up, right? And you don't want to risk injuries. So the very fundamental nature of this business is that you must not just go, it's not, you're not going to a movie theater, you know, you're not expecting what is going to happen there inside. It's not entertainment. This is serious business. So if you take trading as a business and not as an entertainment, in case some people may be doing it for the thrills, but you know, we are doing it for the kills. We need to kill it up there. So if you want to do it, you need to have scanners. So the first thing which is done every evening or in the morning is run through the scanners. It pops out certain stocks which I need to put on my radar. Those I keep it on my radar, and then I look at it intraday. And if intraday I get opportunities on those particular scripts, bang, I just go in for it.
And what's your typical horizon? Is it still that contra, that 3-4 days, 4-5 days kind of a horizon? Or do you typically hold it beyond like 1-2 weeks, that kind of horizon?
What I have seen is I am most successful between, you know, 5 to 7 days maximum. Because I don't know whether it's only happening with me, but I personally don't see stocks running more than 5 to 7 days at a stretch.
I see. So you are basically just trying to ride that one move, and then you will just try to get out at towards the end of the move. Am I right?
Because in my universe, there's another queue of other stocks which I need to look at, which are getting ready for the move. So I don't need to concentrate on that anymore.
I see. So there's always opportunity cost to any particular trade.
Exactly.
That you try to hold too long.
Yes, exactly. So what I feel is that it's not worth taking it. And then again, it depends from individual to individual. If you're a patient person, you will rather, you know, wait, and you would like to see it come down. But what I've seen is if you're closer to the machine, you tend to book trades faster and you book profits faster. So personally, it's better that you put your trades, give it a break. Come back after some time, just monitor it, have a glance at it. Don't get serious about it. Come back towards the end of trade, see what is there, review it, need to close positions, close it, and then get ready for the next day. That's about it.
I see.
It's not like, don't get glued to the screen, because the moment you get glued to the screen, your inner voice starts playing tricks with you, and then, you know, mind says, oh, now it's going to fall, now it's going to go up, and you start interfering in the system. So it's always better if you want to enjoy your trading, at the same time enjoy your time, which you can get as in freedom as a trader, is that you need to do your homework before the market, you need to do your homework after the market, but during the market, just be an observer. Don't try to do too much of homework then.
That's very, very, very true. And I wish that more traders would actually think about this point that you have just brought out, instead of trying to always trying to be in the market or in tune with the market in a way by constantly looking at TV for ideas, for all the gossips and whatever headline information. And they just keep on switching their emotions up and down, which affects their trading ultimately. So so do you personally take short positions in different market, kind of market condition? Like for example, for India market, it has been going steadily, it has been trending higher for the past few years now. It doesn't seem like a bear market is yet on the line. So do you, at this point in time, hold on to any kind of short positions, or how do you play your short and long strategy for yourself?
As I told you, whatever single stock futures are available or single stock options are available, we can use that to the advantage. Normally, I don't try to time the Nifty, the index which is there, because you know, though people say you have a portfolio of X million and, you know, you could hedge it against the indices. But personally, I don't think that works. I think hedging against the indices is not the way forward. Hedging against individual stocks, yes, and pair trading also helps. Like in a particular sector, if you are in the banking sector and you like one particular stock And there's another laggard which you really don't like, or you don't like the management, or you really feel technically also the stock is, you know, making lower lows or certain whatever parameters you've got. You'd rather be bearish on one stock so you can keep a hedge in the market and you can keep balanced in the market. Coming back to pure bear face, there have been times I've been out of the market, but I've been sitting on cash waiting to come into the market, not trying to ride it downwards, because India currently is in a bullish phase. So we find that it doesn't work too well in the long run to stay bearish. So it's only good in short terms, you know, when the market seems to be completely, bonkers, or you find it going haywire, certain scripts hitting 52-week highs, small caps going, bursting at their seams and, you know, hitting upper circuits, then, you know, things are getting haywire. At that point of time, it's better to pull out your money, stay on the side, go short in certain scripts which you feel are bearish and ride it. The best case scenario, add on a little bit of Nifty to that, but not against as a hedge, purely as a bet on the market. No hedging on the Nifty. No hedging on the Nifty. You got that.
Because at least to me, it doesn't make sense if you're trying to take a directional bet and you still try to hedge. Your bet is like you're just paying commissions and paying transaction fees for nothing and not getting the kind of exposure that you are really trying to get in the first place. Yeah. So
in that case, you trim your positions rather than hedge it. You reduce your position. You're not comfortable with the market. As simple as that.
Exactly. With the general bull trend, that means generally you will just focus on looking for ideas to long in a way, rather than trying to look for any kind of ideas to short.
Now, India is currently at its growth what Singapore was possibly in the 90s.
Yeah, that's right.
So, we are right there, and we are growing at that pace now. At the same time, so these golden years, basically, if you study the life cycle of countries, every country goes through a life cycle. And, you know, then from a pure agrarian economy to a manufacturing economy, or in India's case, a service-based economy. And from service-based economy, you start growing. Then the population now for the next till 2025, you know, we are going to be perfectly suited. And then maybe another 10 years, because China is going to be getting off then. So we are looking at this golden period of the next 10, maybe 15 years is when India can enjoy this maximum demographic dividend, after which we become as expensive and we'll be fighting for market share like you.
Yes.
We have this window of opportunity as a country. And it's good that we have Modi and we have policies which are coming in. The other part is that even the macros have started to improve. The GST, which was a major hurdle which we had, that itself has now played its course. And now those irritants which were there, you know, the government thankfully recognized what the industry wanted and has removed most of the irritants, which is literally draconian when they brought it about. And now they've understood that, you know, they're looking at even removing small traders from GST. So these things will definitely help a long way. And the rewards of GST, because India had a complete backlog. The markets are up today or in the last couple of months, is because you look back and you see the unorganized sector, which was there, has now become part of the organized sector. So all those revenues which were not being reported, which were being hidden, or which were being done purely in cash, which were not contributing to GDP numbers, so-called numbers, now have started coming into mainstream, have coming into companies, are coming into the figures. And that is now propelling the figures, showing the profits, showing the revenues, showing the sales. So all that is now coming into the organized sector. And that is the GST kicker, which will now further enhance GDP growth.
I see. And
I think we are on a roll. I see the markets going up at least another 1,000 points from here before any sane correction can take the market down and pull it back to where it is maybe now. This is what the market looks for the next 1 year, notwithstanding, of course, opportunities we get whenever we get the opportunities, because next year is going to be the election year, and then uncertainty again starts looming large before that.
Yeah.
So before that, I would book my profits and take a cruise on the Bahamas then.
So do you personally take a close touch with world events? Because, even if India looks like very strong as a country, but global events could still result in a significant downturn for India, at least in the medium term, which could see very significant and heavy correction, and plus sentiments, if like people get starting to get fearful because of world events, then that could also escalate the significant pullback. Is that something that is always at the back of your mind as well?
It's always at the back of my mind, but when it comes to execution, as I told you, keep that aside. Use logic. Use your system. What does your system say? Does it ask you to sell? Then sell. Irrespective of what Trump is saying or the world is saying. When your system says buy, you need to start digging your heels in. Whether dark clouds are there on the horizon, war with North Korea is around the corner, nothing. You need to be digging your heels in and saying, I need to buy because my indicators, my experience has told me markets don't remain here for too long. And this is a window of opportunity which has opened for me. So I guess, you know, listening too much to news, I think I have given away with that. It's not going to influence me. I'm not, so much into listening about the news anymore. It's just I half an hour of TV in the morning, and that's with my cup of tea, literally. And I look at what the world events are, who's saying what. And before the anchors start giving me tips and all that, I just switch off, know what has happened in the world, how the world has behaved, and what's what. And before they bring in the experts to give me, to pollute my mind with, the things which will start getting me thinking. It's off. I don't need to see more of it. That's the end of it. I'd rather watch a nice YouTube video.
Yes, so and just go back to your trading plan and execute.
And then I go back to my trading. I have my scanner sheet. I go through my sheet. What are my trades for the day? What looks bearish to me? What looks bullish? What I need to buy on declines? What I need to sell on rises? So I've got my short forms, BOD, SOR, blah, 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 blah. I keep on writing next to each script. I visually check out every script. And then I'm sure in my mind what I'm going in for. And when the market gives me an opportunity, before that, I will place the trades. I'll put my stop loss orders. I'll leave it for the system to play it out. It doesn't make a difference when it comes. It can come at 3 o'clock. It's okay. After 3 o'clock, I'll just check it once more to see what are my trades for the day. If I need to make any minor adjustments for that, that's about it. End of day. Forget whatever has booked, whatever has come in. It was expected. And in case what I bought, whether, you know, there will be stop losses in case it's an intraday position. So I will be looking at all that. It's just reviewing my trades. That's it.
So do you typically have those, your stop loss and your profit taking trades or execution program into your trading on platform?
Swing. Yeah, on swing, it'll be there.
Okay.
On swing trades, yes. So, even though the stop loss will be deep, it'll be really deep because for swing trades, margins are better. So it's not intraday. So you can, you know, look at better levels to enter. So before you enter at one level, before the, again, below that, you'll have two more levels to enter, not to exit. Get it? So you'll have one level to enter at this level, and you'll be putting for retracements just in case it comes down again. So you'd like to capture that move because that's where your cream comes in. And then you get ready for the next move.
So I see.
Your loss will be really deep down. It's not going to trigger so easily. Unless, yes, the whole stock has gone for a toss for the day. In that case, then you might as well book your loss and forget about it.
So in a way, your stop loss is purely based on technical level. Like assuming that if it falls to that level, then it is really almost beyond hope that you will have that kind of recovery or that kind of bounce that you're looking for. Am I right to say
that? The reason I do that is for one reason is because otherwise the mind gets you stuck. See, please understand. There's a fundamental truth about sales. I don't know whether you're aware of it. When you buy things, you don't buy because of logic. You buy because of emotion. And then you cover it with logic.
Very true.
Okay, that's the beauty about sales. So when the market is selling you something, we need to do the reverse. We need to look at it with logic, no emotions there. And if you start getting emotional about your trades, then you'll end up as a nervous wreck.
I see.
One day you'll be up, one day you'll be down. And we've all gone through that. It's not that, we've also done that. I've also done that. I think all of us have to do that. And I think it's necessary that when in your trainings and whatever training we impart, we need to tell people that, boss, you're going to learn to swim. And when you swim, it's different swimming in a swimming pool. In a workshop is like swimming in a swimming pool. The real market is the ocean. And that's when I'm going to drop you there. And that's when you really know what to swim. You don't know which shark is going to come from where. I really don't know. So very you need true. To be absolutely different. The skills, you might know swimming, but you won't know how, you know, the waves are going to come, the fish are going to come, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very different talking about it on, you know, in a workshop and explaining things and showing a PowerPoint and even live trading, because that feeling comes only when you're alone and when you're, when you've taken a few gulps of seawater inside and you know what it's, what's happening and you don't see shore anywhere.
I see. So generally, from your perspective and your experience, what would be the principles or the philosophy you should be looking at in terms of taking your profits from a swing trading perspective? Should a trader focus on establishing a target before he even execute a trade, or should he try to use some kind of a trailing stop? What's your take on that, and what's your general preference?
General preference is towards putting my targets rather than trailing it. Because trailing, with today's volatile situation, what tends to happen, even for a flicker of a minute, you know, the trade just, somebody comes and sells a big quantity at a time when the market is not ready, it may just trigger your trade. So trailing stop losses is cumbersome on its own. It's better to rather leave it. Don't try to time the market to that perfection. It's better you put your orders and leave the market. That's it. You don't need to do anything more.
I see.
You review it. You come back after an hour or so, you see the market, you see the pattern. And if the pattern is changed by then, review it by all means. But don't get glued to it and see every minute by minute, you know, the screen. Because the screen is going to fool you. Finally, you'll be fooled.
Mm.
And you take your profits early, your losses will happen very fast.
So if let's say your system tells you that, for example, right now, this particular trade, you should think about getting in. This is like an entry signal or whatever. And you, from it, you look at the chart, you establish, okay, this is where the stop loss is going to be. Do you actually do a rough estimation of where you think your profit target is going to be and look at the risk-reward ratio before you decide whether to take the trade? Or how do you go about making a decision whether to go into the trade or decide not to take this trade?
Risk-reward plays a very, very important factor because, as I told you, when I'm entering a trade, I already know where my stop loss is.
Hmm.
Now, if my stop loss is, say, 20 points away, I cannot have a target which is 20 points, right? I need to see a better target. And if only I can see, visually I can check, and my system gives me that permission, will I go ahead for the trade? Otherwise, I just leave it.
All right, Jagdish, so just to help the participant understand a bit better about how you manage your risk, so how do you actually go about sizing your trades? Do you have some kind of risk parameter that you try to work within in terms of sizing your trades and stuff like that? Could you share a bit more about your thought process on that?
Swing trading around 2.5 to 3% of my capital is what I, per trade, I do take a chance with that. So investing is like I have a bunch of 25 stocks and I don't go beyond 20 normally. So max 25 stocks is what I look at in my investment.
I see. Well, okay. So that was really helpful that you actually share about how you go about having your swing trading workflow and what are some of the things that helps you make your trading decisions. So time is really very tight right now. I wish I have more time to chat with you and understand more about your thought process. But before we end off today's session and interview with you, I was hoping that you could probably share, let's say, three of the best trading best practices that you think that any kind of swing trader would need to be very focused on in terms of implementing them that will increase their chance of being a profitable swing trader. So do you have any kind of like best practices you would like to share?
Yeah, the first thing what I would like to share is to do your homework. And by homework, I mean not Excel. I mean actual physical printouts. If possible, write it down. Because the bluntest pencil is better than the sharpest mind. You know? So let us, what I call it, think and ink. So you need to think it, you need to ink it. Once you ink it, there's some secret thing which goes in your brain where it gets embedded and your recall, everything is much more sharper compared to if you just see it on screen, because we see so many things on screen and our brains are not trained to read and memorize things off the screen. We are more, we've learned that way from childhood, and I think it continues right now. So our love affair with pen and paper is the first thing. So as a trader, you must continue the love affair with pen and paper or graph sheets or, you know, a book where you need to write down. You need to journal your trades. And this is the only way I have been able to improve wise on my trading. Otherwise, I was not able to. I was making the same mistakes again and again. And now I know when I go back and check my journal, I bought this trade on this day at this price, and these were my triggers. These were my reasons. And finally, there's a remarks column. And in the remarks column, I have to write whether it failed, for whatever reason. I may even blame the market on that, but I need to write it down. Because the next time I read it, there are no more excuses for that. Once you do it, it's a mistake, you see. Twice you do it, it's a mistake. Third time, it's pure laziness or bad luck. I mean, whatever you call it. But it's foolishness after maybe four or five mistakes. That means you're not learning from your mistakes. And if the market is going to keep on throwing challenges at you, you are never going to learn ever. So you're going to be a failed trader for sure. So you need to see that you have some method of journaling everything down. And sometimes it helps because, say, for a particular stock, I have traded on it before and it's not worked. And again, I'm getting a particular setup. Sometimes, you know, memory says, yeah, 5-7, you know, maybe weeks back, I did the trade like this. So I can go back and refer to it because the mind, the ego, what we call EGO, that's the biggest word which comes between you and your trading. And as a trader, you need to keep that ego aside. You need to see the facts for yourself. And the facts will talk to you and they'll tell you where you're right or whether you're wrong. So that's very important, maintaining a journal. Second is you should have a system which you have traded on. And that trade should have generated profits. If you can backtest it, whichever, whatever means, test it. After backtesting, you know, test it live through paper trades. After using paper trades, then the confidence comes to include it into real trades. And real trades, again, small stakes, just like building muscles. I don't pick up 100 kilos on one day, right? I need to pick up 1 pound, 2 pounds, repeat, you know, reps, keep on doing the reps. And then that's how strength is developed, right? That's how muscles are developed. So similarly, trading skills are developed in the same manner. Nobody can tell you, okay, from tomorrow, I've trained you, I've taught you in the workshop. Now tomorrow, go lift 50 kgs. So that's not going to work. You need to understand that. So that's the second part. Third is be humble and understand that the market is supreme. And if there's only one person to be blamed, and that's you. So accept responsibility for your trading. Unless you don't accept responsibility for your trading, there are a horde of reasons why the market will go wrong. But finally, you are the decider. You're the actual trend decider for yourself. So you have to trust yourself more than anything else. Because many times I've seen, you know, that we've gone right on many things and last minute, absolute last minute before pressing you withdraw and say, no, I'm not going to take the trade. And then you regret. So I would suggest bang it, take the trade, see what happens. You know, in Hindi, we have a saying, it says, dar ke aage jeet hai. Translates beyond your comfort zone, beyond your fear lies victory. So you need to transcend that. You need to expand. You need to challenge yourself, and markets keep on challenging you anyway. So these are the three things you need to keep in mind as a trader. Need a system. So you have, you know, basically this, they say three things are required. First, you require a method, right? Then you require a mindset for trading. Third, you require money management. But all these three things I had, but I needed something more, and that was a mentor. And that's what you're doing is right. The four M's, you know, mindset, money, method, and mentor. So all these are important. After all that, I need to follow somebody who has been there, done that, failed more than me, so that I don't make those same mistakes. And if he can just share with me, not his successes, but just his failures. And if I learn from that, I'm already on my way to making money on the markets.
That's
very important.
That's a really wonderful sharing. It was really inspirational. And I really love those parts that you use simple analogies of about daily life to explain trading concept and some of the trading best practices. And again, I thank you so much again, Jagdish, for coming on board this online trading summit to share your wisdom with the summit participants, which I believe if any of them finish watching this entire video, they would have learned a lot more things about themselves and how trading works in reality. I wish you all the best in whatever that you are trying to do and continue. Please continue to inspire the generations of traders out there. And hopefully I'll have a chance to meet you up and have a chat in the future. Right. Again, thank you so much, Jagdish, for participating in this online trading summit.
Thank you. Thank you, Philip, so much. You're doing a wonderful job. And I'm sure online trading summit is just a series of, you know, you've just taken the first step and it's going to lead to far, far, far more successes. People need to understand and realize that this is what value is. When they can have, you're doing exactly what Jack Schwager did on Market Wizards. So you're doing the same thing, but online. And that's truly wonderful because people sitting in the comfort of their homes can get experience and expertise and understand whatever little we could share with you. You know, of course, we can't give you more details, but at least the principles on which money is going to be made. And that is important. And if they can even learn a bit from this, I'm sure they will definitely get value. All the best for your programs. Thank you so much for having me. God bless.
Thank you, Jagdish. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Trading Conversations. If you'd like to access past and future episodes of this podcast, please head to traderwave.com/podcast to learn more. That's it from me for now, my friends. I'm your host, Philip Teo, and I look forward to have you joining us again in the next episode of Trading Conversations.